Good morning. Topic for this morning is lacerations on Shabbos. And those who were here last time will recall that at the end of the shiur I had to race out. I was going to Pennsylvania to visit a friend of mine who was ill. So unfortunately he was nifter this past week. And so this time it will be Le'ilui Nishmas, Zev ben Michael. The topic of lacerations on Shabbos is one that I suppose is relevant not just for doctors, but also for just, you know, your standard people in your standard Jewish home who have small children who like to run around and who have a habit of falling and cutting themselves. For the purpose of this class, and I'm not a physician. I do research, but that's about it. But for the purpose of this class, when I talk about a laceration, I mean something that is relatively shallow. I'm not talking about where the child has done something sufficient to cut a major blood vessel or something like that. We're talking about kid falls, scrapes, cuts, may have a concern for infection, may have a concern for how to stop the bleeding, may have somewhat of a jagged cut, and now you have to know how to seal it up properly. That's what we're talking about. They come to the pediatrician's door, or they handle this themselves. I didn't think that was so funny. They come to the pediatrician's door and say, "What do we do? Should we take him to the hospital? Does he need stitches? Does he not need stitches?" And I did some research about this online to try to find out what the recommendations are. Looked at the University of Virginia Health System, WebMD, of course, Royal Children's Hospital of Melbourne, the U.S. National Guideline Clearinghouse for Schools, basically anywhere that Google would take me to find out what you're supposed to do medically to treat a laceration. And this is what I learned, and please, doctors, correct me if I'm getting something wrong. I learned that there are four steps to this. First is stopping the bleeding, for which basically they talk about applying pressure. Second, cleaning the wound, for which I saw three recommendations. One was hydrogen peroxide, another was antibiotic ointment, and then a third was squirting saline on the wound under pressure. Third is closing the wound. We'll come back to that in a minute. And fourth is covering the wound. Right, those are the four steps that I saw. Am I on track? Okay. In terms of closing the wound, that's the most complex. I saw three basic options. One is called sometimes a butterfly bandage and sometimes a Steristrip. The Steristrip sounded like it was probably a trademark name of some kind. But basically, it's adhesive, and you use it to try to bring the sides of the wound together. It's better for a regular short wound, from what I understand, and the advantages of that over, let's say, stitches are, number one, minimum of pain. You don't need to use any kind of anesthetic. And in terms of long-term wound care, apparently less is needed. That's one approach. A second approach are stitches. Stitches have a disadvantage, and I'm not talking about halach disadvantage, I'm talking about medically, of requiring some kind of anesthetic generally. They tend to be necessary for a jagged wound or for a long wound, possibly for facial wounds. The advantage, I'm told, is in terms of a shorter healing time potentially, and it's better for avoiding infection by holding the ends of the wound tightly closed, particularly when you have a wound like a facial wound where the body shifts a lot. And is that an accurate understanding?
I think they're pretty close. The Steristrip on the kind of laceration you're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, the advantages are what you said about the anesthesia.
Yeah.
But I think the outcome is pretty much the...
Interesting. I'm going to come back to that comment in 1 second.
The other thing is the depth of a wound.
Right.
A real deep wound, you probably need a stitch.
A stitch, right.
Regardless of whether it's pouring blood out of it.
Right.
It's deep.
Okay. Good. So that's important to note, also the depth. The third item, the third approach that's mentioned is surgical glue or dermabond, where no anesthesia is needed. You need to be careful not to use extra stuff, not to use too much of it, not for halachic reasons, but for medical reasons, reasons of comfort as well as efficiency. Also, they noted that it's exothermic, that apparently it will generate heat and a feeling of discomfort for the patient. But those are the three options that I saw recommended in terms of closing wounds. I also gave you a reference on the sheet just because I found it fascinating in terms of the article itself and the comments on the article. An article from the British Medical Journal online, suturing versus conservative management of lacerations of the hand, and particularly what Laser just said, reminded me of it. The argument of the study authors was that stitches do not improve the aesthetic appearance of the wound and may have a longer healing time. And then there were a whole bunch of comments on the article by physicians saying just the opposite, our experience is the opposite. It's, you know, it seems to be subject to machlokas.
The form of closure wound, usually for a second large one, which is stable.
Mm. Is that one? Stable.
I don't know. You clarify that by saying you were only going superficially, nothing being.
You can use staples on a superficial level.
Yeah, okay. Particularly it's used for scalp wounds. So the child, the beauty of it is, on a scalp injury, the child falls back, right?
Yeah.
So you don't have an option for the Steri-Strip,
right?
And you'd rather not suture. And aesthetically and cosmetically, you don't care.
Right.
So this is a very good, efficient way.
So how are the staples applied?
With a stapler.
With a stapler.
Medical stapler.
So it's pressure, essentially.
It's like a medical stapler. You just basically apply it to the scalp, put it to, and it's perfect for scalp. That's where you'd never use it on the body.
And the ends.
Well, do it for her on the arms and the legs.
Yes, but not outside of a surgery.
Okay, but I want to make sure I understand just what you do with this.
I haven't done it. I haven't done on my hernia.
Wait, do the ends of them bend together? Folks. So the ends bend together. Interesting. That's a very interesting problem. Okay. Good. So that's good to know about. We'll see how the halachas that we learn apply to the staple question then. It'll be a little on the job work here. So we have two major questions that we need to address, with some sub questions that become involved. First, in terms of setting the stage, how do we view the level of need of the patient? And in hierarchy here, from most serious to least serious, the most serious but an unlikely concern with a laceration like I'm describing would theoretically be the issue of blood loss. I'm talking about something that's shallow. I'm not talking about something that's hitting a major vessel. From what I understand, it's exceedingly unlikely that you get into a blood loss situation, but I want to discuss it a little bit because it will feed into a much more important, a much more relevant discussion, which is dealing with an illness which is not life-threatening today, but could become life-threatening after Shabbos. So if you have a slow blood loss or something like that, where you'll say, well, you know what, you can make it through today, but he's going to be in danger if you wait too long. And there are numerous analogous cases outside of blood loss discussion. Everything from hunger to low iron levels to, you know, diabetics or whatever, all sorts of situations where if you let it go long enough, it will become life-threatening, but at the moment, it's not. So the question is, how do I view this in terms of a larger pikuach nefesh of saving lives on Shabbos? A more likely consideration is infection. And left untreated, infection could damage the patient very seriously. So how does halacha view infection? Do we look at that as a significant factor? Another issue, fascinating issue, is the issue of pain, which is not illness. How do we view a person who is in pain? He's not ill. He's not sick. He's not a cholesh, ein bo sakana. He's not a cholesh, yesh bo sakana. He's going to be fine. But right now, he's in pain. So do I treat that on Shabbos? And then last in these issues of setting the stage, because lacerations often do involve children, what is the child's status as a chola? We talk about children automatically being considered chola she'en bo sakana. What does that mean? Where does it come from, and how do we apply it? At what age does a child stop being an automatic chola? So these are all within the rubric of setting the stage for this. And then once we know what the level of need is, how we define the patient, then we have to ask, what are the issues involved in different modes of treatment? Whether we're talking about sutures or glue or staples or anything else, what exactly is the issue? What are the halachic challenges? And then you can put everything together and say, okay, so this is what we do. So going back to the first question, the patient who could wait until after Shabbos, but whose situation would ultimately become dangerous. Take a look, please, at the Gemara in Ksuvos, source Aleph. It's just a quick one-liner there, but it causes tremendous trouble. Tanya, the Braisa says, Rabbi Marinus Omer, goneach yoneg chalav b'Shabbos. One who is goneach, one who is moaning, is allowed to nurse on Shabbos to drink milk. This doesn't mean a child, this means an adult. Is allowed to nurse. My time or why? Yonek mifarek kel achar yad, because nursing fundamentally is a subset of mifarek, which is a subset of dosh, of threshing. In threshing, you take something solid and you break it into smaller parts. The idea is that the act of nursing itself and drawing the milk out takes the surface of the skin and breaks it up a little bit to allow the milk to emerge. However, it's not a normal way of breaking something up. It's kel achar yad. It's considered to be an unusual method. U'makom tzara lo gazru rabbanan, and the rabbanan did not decree a prohibition against this in a case of pain. So because the act of nursing is a rabbinic prohibition, this patient who is hungry is allowed to do it on Shabbos. Because it's a rabbinic prohibition, in that you're doing it in an abnormal way. That's the statement of the Gemara. Now we're going to come back to this Gemara in terms of the comment about Tsar and not making rabbinic decrees in cases of pain. That's its own discussion. But what he's saying is, I can do this. I can nurse on Shabbos if I am simply very, very hungry. So the question is, are we talking about someone who is life and death hungry? We're talking about someone who's just, you know, uncomfortable because he's hungry? Let's take a look at the comments of the Rashba, please, in source base. Yes.
Is this a child that's crying?
This is an adult. Yes, as odd as it sounds, this is an adult. So the Rashba is terribly bothered because we have a Gemara that seems to say the opposite in Yevamos. Ika de kashyole. There are those who are troubled here. Hade amrinin bi Yevamos, parakherish. Abashal omer noagin ayinu yonkim nabahema bi yom tov. The Gemara in Yevamos, Abashal says, our practice was that we would drink from animals on yom tov. Ve'akshinon, and the Gemara there asks, hey chidami, what's your case? If there's danger involved, meaning if you don't drink, your life is in danger, then afilu b'shavas nami, then you should drink even on Shabbos. Right? Why does he stress Yom Tov? It should be even a Shabbos thing. V'idaleka sakana, and if there's no danger involved, afilu b'yom tov nami lo, then you can't do it on Yom Tov either. So why does he, what's this Yom Tov thing? V'okimna d'ika tzara, and the Gemara there establishes this talking about where the patient is in pain. So Shabbos d'isr skila gazru be'rabanan. For Shabbos, where the prohibition involves a death penalty if you break Shabbos, if you perform halacha. So the Rabbanan said, even though you're in pain, you can't drink. So says the Gemara in Yevamos. Yom Tov, Deleka Isser Skila Lo Gazri Be'Rabbanan. Yom Tov has a lesser penalty. The penalty for Malach and Yom Tov is Kares. So therefore, the Rabbanan did not decree a prohibition against drinking, against doing this nursing, if you're in pain. That's the end of the quote from Yevamos. And so the Rashba says, I don't understand. Alma B'Shabbos Afilu Makom Tzara Nami Aser. The implication of Yevamos is that if you're in pain on Shabbos, you still can't nurse. So our problem is, on the one end, when it came to our Gemara, we said the hungry one is allowed to drink on Shabbos. On the other end, Yevamos says you're not allowed to. So which is it? So first he brings an answer from Rabbeinu Hananel. Rabbeinu Hananel said our Gemara in Ksuvos, when it was talking about pain, meant someone who's in danger. To which the Rashba says, what are you talking about? Beit HaMechuvar, he says, that's unclear. It's a polite way to say, I don't agree. The im came, because if so, my lememra, then what was the Gemara saying? Why did I need a Gemara to tell me that if you're in danger, you're allowed to nurse on Shabbos? If I'm in danger on Shabbos, I can go to the store, buy the milk, and drink, so to speak. The Pshita, it's obvious. Va'od, and further, my iria mishum de mefari kel achayadu. Further, our Gemara needed to explain, well, it's only a rabbinic prohibition because it's in an abnormal manner of breaking up. He says, afilu mefari gomer b'makom sakana shari. If he's really in danger, the fact that it's derabanan is irrelevant. You could do it even if it was a daraisa, even if it was a biblical consideration. So he quotes a second answer from Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam Zalpirish, Tzara Dasam Hainu Tzar Te'obon. Rabbeinu Tam explained that pain over there is talking about being hungry in the Gemara where they didn't permit it on Shabbos. V'hainu Damrinam Lo Tzricha Dika Tzara Yom Tov Deleka Isser Skila Lo Gazer. He says, that's what they meant when they said in the Gemara that it's talking about where there is pain. So for Yom Tov, where there's no death penalty involved, they didn't decree any rabbinic prohibition. V'lo Ka'amar B'makom Tzara Lo Gazer Abanan. They didn't give you the standard answer in the Gemara in Yevamos of, in a case of pain, the Rabbanan don't make decrees. They didn't apply that rule. They gave you instead a rule that was unique to the case of nursing. Why didn't they apply the general rule? Because the general rule won't apply where you're just hungry. That's not the type of pain for which we say that rabbinic decrees are averted. He says that's why. I'm going to jump the rest of his response to Rabbeinu Tam because I want to get to his own answer. V'hanachon, the next to last line of my quote from the Rashba, the correct read, he says, Mashakasav Rav Alfasi Zal B'Shabbos Perek Chavis. He quotes you the riff from the Gemara in the 24th Perek in Shabbos, 24th or 22nd. Perek and Shabbos, the Rabbi Marinus pliga ad Abba Shaul. So that Rabbi Marinus actually disagrees with Abba Shaul. You want to know why Yevamos and Ksuvos seem to be saying two different things? Why Ksuvos says you're allowed to nurse because it's only a rabbinic prohibition on Shabbos, and Yevamos says you're only allowed to on Yom Tov? The answer is because there's a disagreement. It's a machlokas hasugyos. Rabbi Marinus and Ksuvos disagrees with Abba Shaul and Yevamos. The Kaimalan Rabbi Marinus, and we follow Rabbi Marinus's view. That any time there is pain related to illness, even though there is no danger, mifareik, you can still do this act of mifareik of breaking up the skin in order to nurse kila achar yad. In an abnormal way. It is abnormal. V'af b'Shabbos shari, and it will be permitted even on Shabbos, not just Yom Tov. V'haynu d'amar Rav Yosef, and that's what Rav Yosef meant when he said, I didn't quote this here on the page because it was going to make the line go over. I was trying to obey the rule of only keeping all my sources on one page. So I didn't quote it for you. But after the quote that I had in Source Aleph, Rav Yosef says, Halacha k'Rabbi Marinus. So the Rashba says, yeah, you know why he needed to say that? Because halacha mechlada pligi alei, because there was in fact someone who disagreed. The Gemara and Yevamos disagreed. Abba Shaul disagreed. So the upshot of this discussion is that the Rashba says, if a person is in pain on Shabbos, and he is in trouble because he doesn't have milk, he's permitted to nurse because it's fundamentally a rabbinic issue and he is in pain. And the commentators quote this Rashba to say, you know what? He's groaning from hunger. The Rishonim, they make this comment. See the Rashba, but see also others on that riff in Perek Chavis. The idea is that the patient is very hungry, and if he waits long enough, his life will be in danger. Not on Shabbos, but later on. And so they use this as a justification for violating a derabanan for something which could become life-threatening after Shabbos is over, like the case of the Goneach. And so it is ruled in the poskim. If you take a look at Source Gimel, we find this in the Shulchan Aruch regarding internal injuries. Maka shel halal, a wound of the inside of the body. Eina tzricha omed, it does not require evaluation of do I or don't I break Shabbos. Shafilu ein sham bikiyim, even if there are no experts to consult, v'chola eina omer klum, and the ill person says nothing, osim lo kol shiragilim lasos lo b'chol. We will do for him everything that you would do during the week. But if you know that illness can wait and it doesn't require desecration on Shabbos, you'll still have a chance to treat him after Shabbos. Also, you're not allowed to break Shabbos for it, even though it's an internal injury. So you see him saying you can't treat it as long as you'll have the option of treating after Shabbos. Now, what does that mean? I have the option of treating after Shabbos. The Mishnah Berurah clarifies. Umakirim ba'oso choli shemamtin sors dalid, rotza lomar, meaning to say, shemakirim bebeirur, shalo yizgaber ha'choli yoser al yedei shenamtin ad halayla b'motzoi Shabbos, meaning we know with certainty. I don't know how often physicians know with certainty. They may speak with certainty, but I'm not sure how often they know with certainty. But he says, if you know with certainty that the illness will not get worse by waiting until nightfall. In other words, if I think that I may be able to treat it after Shabbos, but it's going to get worse and make it harder, then I don't wait. This is only specifically where I really believe I have the option of waiting. The Nishmas Avram on this quotes the Rashash in Yuma, Pei Dalet Amud Beis, that if the treatment needs to be that day, we don't push it off within Shabbos itself. This is an important point. Meaning, I know that something's going to need to be done today. It's now Shabbos morning. I do not wait until Shabbos afternoon in order to do it. I do it now, Shabbos morning. There's no value in waiting longer to delay within Shabbos itself. So what do I do? I treat it, this case of pain, which I know will not get worse until after Shabbos, where there is an illness, but it's not life-threatening yet. So the answer is, I treat it but I treat it with derabanans. Take a look, please, at source Hay and Vav. Yes.
To ask a question which I know we didn't get to yet, but just to put it to frame it, you're framing now the question around pain or treatment. Most of these lacerations that we're discussing, the ones that come up beyond the door on Shabbos, the treatment, if it's delayed beyond Shabbos, is that you won't be able to do it. But the question is, it won't add or diminish pain.
Right.
So it's not relevant to the topic that we just discussed, but you won't be able to exercise that treatment.
Correct. Correct. And like you said, we haven't gotten to it yet. But at that point, yes, we have to view it from that perspective. Source Hay says, "Hachoshesh b'shinav lo yigameya b'am chometz v'yiflot." If somebody has a toothache, he should not gargle with vinegar and then spit it out. Avol megameya uboleya, he gargles and swallows it. O metal bokidarko, or he can dip his bread in the vinegar and eat it, and so treat the toothache with vinegar. The concern is that treating it with vinegar outright looks like a medical treatment, whereas using vinegar as part of your food, is something that people do, even if it's not medical, and therefore doesn't have the appearance of violating Shabbos. That's the Shulchan Aruch statement. So the Mishnah Berurah says, first of all, "Bahu adin yayin saraf gam kein dino kemal chometz." He says the same thing is true for whiskey. The same idea. Ah, however, b'makom tsar gadol, where there's great pain, efshar lismoch b'yayin saraf, you could say, you know what, I'll use the whiskey. D'mutar la'ar l'shahosel b'fiv v'livloa achar kach, he can keep it in his mouth for a while and swallow it afterwards. So that even though it looks a little bit like a medical treatment, since this is a derabanan, you're in this great pain, you're allowed to do that. V'ayin sham la'el d'al yidei yisrael mutar davko al yidei shinui. I see a lot of people with toothaches on Shabbos. And he says, "See, I'm going to jump to the last part of it in the interests of time. But the idea in general is that a derabanan would be permitted for somebody who's in this painful situation, which is not a life-threatening situation that day. The application of this is we wouldn't give a treatment that day if it could wait until later." I might go with a permissible stopgap today and then do something later on, assuming it's actually going to be an option. As Laser said, we have to revisit the question of whether this can even be done after Shabbos and whether you will have lost the opportunity. Okay. The second of our setup questions is the question of how halacha treats infection. It's theoretically a relatively new concept. I say theoretically because, of course, the Gemara observes, it's now a well-known passage after the Mitzitza fights of the last few years, but the Gemara talks about the need to withdraw blood from the wound, from a bris milah, from a circumcision, and considers it a life and death situation. You cannot leave the blood in the wound. And it's not far-fetched, and it has been argued that the concern that they have without presenting the science behind it was simply that they saw that there were kids whose wounds got infected when the blood was not withdrawn. So whether they observed the effects of infection is a separate point. The question is, how halachically do we view infection and the disinfection process? So the poskim are concerned about infection, even though it's a long-term concern, and the concern only begins on Shabbos itself. This comes up in various cases. Take a look, please, at source Zion. This is the Aruch HaShulchan's comment regarding covering your face in the rain when you're traveling outside the Eruv. Okay, so the concern is you're traveling outside the Eruv. You're in a situation in which you can't carry things. You would like to carry a cover for your face. This isn't the medical discussion yet. You want to carry a cover for your face, but carrying is prohibited. You're not allowed to transport things outside the Eruv. So he says, V'zeh l'shon Rabbeinu HaRama, he quotes the Rama, saying, V'lachein mutter lobosh beged mipnei ha-gishamim o kova al rosho, that you are allowed to wear a garment because of the rain, to keep rain off, and you are allowed to wear a hat on your head. Aval aser l'ish alitein beged al se'ifa mipnei ha-gishamim dein zederach malbush, but you couldn't put a garment over your scarf, because that's not normal wearing of things. That's clearly a protective element. Akam l'shono, that's the Rama. Kolomar, meaning, kishe'enu mechase rak harosh lo havi derech malbush. If it only covers the head, and that's it, it's clearly about covering her scarf that's on her head, then it's not considered wearing something. Amnam, but then he says the point that's relevant for us. Im kavanasa shelo yitzaru osa hagishamim, mutar b'chol inyan. If her intent is to keep the rain off because the rain is paining her directly, then it's permitted. I can wear whatever shield, protective shield I want to keep the rain off if it's causing me pain by being on my face. Now, obviously, this is a light degree of pain. It's a disturbance. It's an annoyance. It's not pain in the way we usually think of it. Even if it's just protecting her from getting dirty from the rain getting on makeup or whatever it is. Olafiza, and therefore. Kishayorid Gishama Mumachasa Akova Shalaba Mitpachas Usur. Therefore, he says, if rain descends and you're going to cover your hat by putting some kind of a cover over it, and you're outside the Eruv, he says, that's Usur. Kevin She'enu Machasa. Leave aside the Ohel discussion, which is another discussion I'm not going to go into here. Kevin She'enu Machasa Rakrosho, because it's only covering your head. Amna Mimachasa Gamala Panim, but if it also covers your face, so it's that the rain doesn't cause you pain. Mutter, it's permitted. Even though you also intend to keep your hat from being damaged. And the idea is that when you're traveling outside the Erev, you're allowed to wear clothing. If it's keeping your face from getting wet, that's clothing. That's the fundamental idea that the Aruch HaShulchan is presenting. Well, along comes the Nishmas Avram and says, you know, if for pain you're able to override this, if out of considerations for pain I'm able to override my concerns for transport and say, well, it's a garment, that's certainly true if the item I want to wear is to prevent infection. That, he says, is even greater. He's dealing with the question of wearing a protector over a catheter. Is his comment. Take a look at source Ches. Umuter gam laseis im hasakit akshurolo kevin shechibura letzinor hakatheter gam magen me efsharut shel zihum b'shapuches hashesen umonei amitzara guf. He says, certainly you're allowed to go out with some kind of a bag that is tied to it. Since it is connected to the pipeline of the catheter itself, and it protects from infection in the pipeline, so to speak, itself of the urine, umonea mitzara guf, and it prevents pain to the body. He says the concern for infection is a greater concern than infection of the body, and therefore than pain to the body, and therefore he's willing to accept this. The term zihum is the term he uses for infection. The other term that I've seen used in Chuvos is infectia, but he uses zihum. The Tseliezer uses infectia. The point is that they consider infection to be a significant halachic issue on Shabbos. On the same basis, the Shemir Shabbos Kehilchasa permitted cutting the infected edges of a wound on Shabbos. Even though you're cutting off skin from the body, and that's its own prohibition, nonetheless, with concern for infection, you would be allowed to do so. Clearly, we will permit violating a derabbanan at the least to prevent infection, even without knowing of a specific concern. Yes?
Has anyone analyzed the infection issue from the point of view that infection, if it sets in, even after Shabbos, can lead to sakana?
Well, that's exactly where we're going with it.
Okay.
That's exactly where we're going with it. That's correct. Okay. The third of our setup issues is the issue of pain, which is not actually about illness, just general pain. Now, that's a very hard thing to quantify. What does that mean when you say pain? They have all sorts of standards now. They ask the patient on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, how would you describe your pain? Well, try to ask that to a child. Do they do that in pediatrics? Mm-hmm. Do they get standardizable results? Really? Because for my kids, it's always 10.
Right. You can analog. Pictures of the children.
Yeah.
So you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, because it's not done by, right? So, but it's not done by feedback from the kid. It's done by a separate standard. Okay.
Called a visual MRI.
Got it. Got it. Okay. Good to know. The Shulchan Aruch talks about this issue of pain. Take a look at source test. Mishi yeshlo mechush ba'alma. Someone who has just a sensitivity. But he's able to strengthen himself and to walk around like someone who's healthy. Asur lasas lo shum refuah. You may not do any treatment whatsoever for him. Even via someone who is not Jewish. That's the decree, lest you grind up medicine on Shabbos. The overall concern regarding medical treatment, that there are abundant concerns. So the Shulchan Aruch has no patience for the person who is just a little annoyed by something that's going on. What does that mean? And what, you know, can he you give me cases? Sure. The Aruch HaShulchan says a light headache or bellyache. That's the Shulchan Aruch comment. You know, keep the door open, actually. Thanks. I like the circulation. The Nishmas Avram says a cough. Those are examples of it. A cough, a headache, a bellyache. Remembering the Shulchan Aruch standard that we're talking about, the Shulchan Aruch standard is that we're talking about where you are able to get up and walk around on Shabbos. So how do we view pain in halacha? Well, we just saw in source Aleph, B'makom Tzara Lo Gazru Rabbanan, right? The Rabbanan did not make their decrees in a case of pain. Does that mean that all the Rabbanans are suspended? Well, I might have thought so, but take a look, please, at source... I'm sorry. Take a look, please, back at the source we just read, source Tess, where we said explicitly that you can't. Right? You just told me in the Gemara, B'makom Tzara Lo Gazru Rabbanan. The Rabbanan did not make their decrees in cases of pain. But the Shulchan Aruch says if someone is in pain, but he's able to get up and walk around, then you don't treat him on Shabbos. So how do I understand that?
I would have reconciled that as saying Nechush Baum was not Tzara for the previous case.
So it's just a matter of degrees.
Sure.
We just need faces Nechush in the Shulchan Aruch.
Right. Nechush Baum is the lowest form of, it's exactly what you said, it's an annoyance. Whereas Tzara, the person who has, even Tzara Teyoba,
right,
would still be a, he's moaning.
Right.
There's a difference between moaning and...
Right. So that's a good instinctive read, and it actually harks back to the Rashba, right, in source number 2, where he was trying to resolve our Gemara in Ksuvos versus the Gemara in Yevamos, and one answer was they only permitted it on Yom Tov. It was a light pain. You needed a more serious pain to permit it in on Shabbos. But take a look at a very interesting formulation in Shir Shabbos Gehilchas, source Yid Aleph. Fascinating way to look at this. And it rings so true regarding comments that I've made to people in the past regarding Tanis Tzibur. He says, "V'ayin shin zayin pei Rabbi Akiva Eger, the cholsha asruhu mishum gezera sharinan b'mitztayer, that whenever something is prohibited as a rabbinic decree, we permit it if you're in pain." V'shamati migon Rav Shmuel Zalman Orbach shlita da gezera shashchika sammanim meikara gazru osa al hamitztayer k'dei shelo yavuli de'avera. He says, "Wait a minute! The whole decree of don't." Don't treat medically lest you grind up stuff for your medicine. That decree was made for someone who's in pain. Right? Lest he go and grind stuff up. In other words, the decree assumes that you're in pain and says don't do it anyway. It's like the comment regarding fast days. Someone comes to the rabbi and says, "Rabbi, we still have like 4 hours left to go for the fast. I can't make it through." "Why not?" "Well, I'm hungry." Yeah. That's part of why we have fast days. The point is to be hungry. Being hungry in and of itself is not reason to override a fast. Right? And being someone who needs medical treatment is not sufficient to override the prohibition against medical treatment. It was made for that situation. That's what the Gzera meant. So combining that with Laser's point about the degrees of pain, what we understand here is that the reason why the Shulchan Aruch says don't treat someone who only has mechush is because there are certain degrees of pain that are considered to be acceptable under this gezerah, and they really are implicit in the gezerah, in the decree itself. It doesn't mean that all pain is going to be overridden. That's not true. But it does mean that some pain is going to be considered acceptable for a person. That's the idea. Question?
Kind of, we don't grind medicine anymore. Does that make a difference?
Sorry?
Kind of, we don't have to grind the medicine anymore.
Oh, that's a classic question. The classic question of what do you do when we don't grind medicine anymore? To which I would give you a couple of answers on really just al regalachas, because it's really, that's its own shear, really. Number one is that we do grind medicine. I mean, certain types of medicine will not be ground up by the end user. That's true. But number one, the pharmacist in the pharmacy is, as I understand it, still doing, if nothing else, cutting things up into small swallowable parts. That actually is grinding. That's tochin on Shabbos. But number two, you get into the thornier question of at what point do you nullify a gezerah? At what point do you nullify a decree? And that's a much larger issue, which requires greater analysis, not only of halacha but also of the actual practical context. What actually goes on today in a pharmacy and what goes on in somebody's home? So yeah, I'm going to hold that one over. We do permit having a non-Jew perform an act that's only rabbinically prohibited on Shabbos for somebody who is in pain but is not in a life and death situation. It's actually a machlokos between Tosfos and the Rambam. If you take a look, please, at source Yud Beis. Regarding the Gemara in Gittin, regarding Yishuv Eretz Yisrael settling Israel, so the Tosfos makes a comment there. The Gemara there talks about buying land in Israel and having someone who isn't Jewish write up the deed or sign the deed. There's a whole discussion about what exactly is meant. But Tosfos there says that all that they're going to permit there is really for the sake of settling the land of Israel. For no other mitzvah would we allow you to tell an akum to perform a biblically prohibited malacha, only for buying land in Israel. Like we find the Gemara in Erevin, there was a child who was due to have a bris, and the hot water they had for caring for him after the bris, washing the wound after the bris, was not available and it spilled out. So the question is, do I do the bris? Because if I do the bris, then it'll be pikuach nefesh, and I'll be allowed to heat up water. So that's what they wanted to know there. Asla kamei de Rava, they came to Rava. Amar lo, and he said, l'shailu le'imei, id sricha, nechaimu le'agav imei. Rava's answer was, ask the mother, who's still healing after the birth, does she need hot water? And if so, we'll heat up water for her, and along the way, for the kid as well. It sounds like it was the day of the bris, that they needed to heat up the water so that they could give the kid the bris. And it was before the bris. Because if it's after the bris, the kid's already in life and death situation. You need to clean the wound. We would do it even without his mother. And as Rashi notes there, it's with someone who isn't Jewish. So Tosfos makes the point that it's only in unique cases that you're able to have a non-Jew do something on Shabbos. It's only in these unique cases, like settling the land of Israel, like for the sake of Bris Milah, only in those cases. Whereas the Rambam in Yud Gimel says, Davar she'eino malacha. Actually, I think they're agreeing, come to think of it. I think that Taz and the Rambam are agreeing. I don't know why I thought it was a machlokes, but here we're talking about a Deo Raisa. The Rambam is going to talk about a Deo Abanan. I don't think it is a machlokes. I think they're on the same page. Yes, this is not a matter of the machshir. This is something you're going to need after. Yeah. So the Rambam writes in Yud Gimel, "Davar she'eino malacha ve'ein asur la'asoso b'Shabbos." If something is not malacha and it's not prohibited on Shabbos, ela mishum shavus, except as a derabanan, mutar li Yisrael lomer l'goy la'asoso b'Shabbos. A Jew could tell a non-Jew to do it on Shabbos. Tell him outright. V'hu she'yi asham miktzas choli. As long as there is some level of illness, o yet tzarech l'davar tzarech harbe, or you need it for some great reason, o mipnei mitzvah, you need it for a mitzvah. That's what you need to have in order to be allowed to do this. So, sorry?
Go on.
Yeah. So the Shulchan Aruch sides with the Rambam, as does the Mishnah Berurah. And we end up saying that when the only issue is pain, you could tell a non-Jew to do the Derabbanan, but that's about it. So that's our third of our preface questions. We dealt with the question of what if you can wait until after Shabbos, but it'll ultimately become dangerous. And we said that in such a case, we would wait until after Shabbos. We would only do the Rabbanans that day. We asked about infection, and we determined that it is a significant halachic issue. And we talked about the pain of a non-chola and said that would be sufficient grounds for having an akum do a Rabbanan. That's what we've got so far. Now, the last bit is the status of a child, which, again, could also be its own shear, but we're going to have to abbreviate a little bit rather than go through it in great depth. But take a look, please, at the comment from the Ramah that we have here on the sheet in source Yud Dalet. Mutar lomar le'eno Yehudi lasas tavshil lekatan she'eno ma'le'achol. You are allowed to tell someone who isn't Jewish to make food on Shabbos for a kid who has no other food to eat. Because the Rama says words that are immortalized in the way we treat kids, the needs of a child are assumed to be like chola she'en bo sakana, a child who is not in danger for his life. We assume the kid is considered to be like a chola. So who counts as a child? It depends on what your paradigm is. It's a fascinating discussion. It depends on how you think the Rama got to this conclusion. The Aruch HaShulchan, as well as the Ketzos HaShulchan and the Fadei HaShulchan, argues that it's based on the issue of a child who needs special food, like the Rama said, a child who needs food that you don't have available. And so he says it's only as long as children eat special baby food. So the age of 2, the age of 3, and that's it. That's the most strict view out of all of them. The Tzitz Eliezer, on the other hand, as well as the Vilna Gaon, had a different source. They compared it to the Gemara about a child who's locked in a room, where the child is locked into a room and he's getting hysterical, and you're allowed to break down the door in order to get into to the child. And so they say it's based on a child who needs his parents, needs his mother, and therefore he's going to be frantic if he doesn't get out of that room. And therefore he says basically up to age 6 or so, which is the age used for sukkah, also regarding a child needing to be with the mother. On the other hand, the Minchas Yitzchak gives you another view, and the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchos sides with this view as well, that says, no, it's a different source entirely. It's the issue of Yom Kippur. How old do we say a child has to be before we start having him fast on Yom Kippur? Basically 10, and you start training the child at age 10, roughly. So it's in source Tezvav. I'm not going to read it out in the interest of time, but I brought it so you'd be able to see it. He says the issue really is the status of children on Yom Kippur. So he says, there we say the kid is in danger up until the age of 9 or 10. So he says that's our standard as far as Shabbos is concerned. Given that Shmir Shabbos Kehilchos likes that number, I think there's plenty of room to rely on that. I will note that Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is quoted in the Nishmas Avram as saying that he wants to go with the strictest view, that it's a 2 or 3 year old view. So there are multiple views on this. It's not a clear cut issue. But if you had a child dealing with pain, like we've talked about, you already have the pain issue. You might really rely on the Mechilim to automatically consider a Machola She'en Bo Sakana. The practical application of that being that you could violate the Derabbanan personally and not have to go looking for an Akum to do it. On all practical issues, as always, please ask the Marad Asra. But this is this statement by Shmir Shabbos Kehilchos and Rav Yitzchak Weiss and the Minchas Yitzchak saying that you could consider him to be a Chol HaShem Basakana up until the age of 9 or even 9 or 10 according to Shmir Shabbos Kehilchos is a major statement to potentially allow treatment. This has just all been set up. Now we have to look at the treatments themselves and what the issues are that are involved. And I'm going to try to wrap this up in the next 15 minutes or so with luck. We wanted to make each topic really a standalone instead of having people wait 3 weeks for part 2. That doesn't seem to be a good way to do it. So the price of it is trying to cram things in a little bit. When you're dealing with stitches, as well as other means of sealing a wound, not only stitches, the major consideration that comes in is tofer, sewing. Even though we usually think of sewing as a needle and thread, halachically we apply sewing to any time you fasten two surfaces close together. That's already considered to be sewing. I take two surfaces and I stick them together. I take a sticker and I put it on a page or on a wall. That's already considered to be a problem of tofer. Depends how permanent it is. If I have a magnet on a refrigerator, generally speaking, we don't consider that to be tofer because it's a fairly light thing. You close the fridge and the magnets drop. It's not that's not considered that strong. But it is a major issue otherwise. So the question is, will we apply it here? There's a major debate as to whether stitching applies to skin. That's where this comes in. Take a look, please, on your sheet. Source Yud Zayin, Shmir Shabbos Kehilchos says, De'ein alas or mishum tofer, we would not prohibit it as stitching. Shemekarevis hashulayim zelazeh, one is taking the ends of the wound and bringing them close to each other. Sharei lo matzanu iser tofer begufa adam, because he said there's no such thing as stitching when you're dealing with human skin. He says it's just not applicable. Which is a very interesting comment for him to make, because the mentor of the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchos is Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. And Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is quoted in the Nishmas Avram as saying, no way. He says, absolutely, stitching is an issue regarding human skin. Take a look at Yud Ches. I keep saying shlita because that's what it is in the sources that I'm quoting. Obviously, by now it's Zatzal, but he says sheyesh chashash shall iser de'oraisa shall tefira v'chol atipulim anal. He says there is a concern of violating a biblical prohibition against stitching with all of these different treatments that we've discussed. Shekoma tarasam lechaper shteispos hachatach, because their goal is always to join the two sides of the wound. And that gives you a quote. Nira de kamosha medavik beiz niyara so etim dakim lasosam etz ava chayv mishum tover. Just as we say that one who sticks two papers together, or one who sticks together two small pieces of wood to make a thicker piece of wood, is liable as stitching. Who did not meet tofer besar adam? So too, if you're stitching human flesh, or the skin, shuki besar, which is like the flesh, and he wants them to endure and be joined together, that you do have to be concerned for tofer. Granted that the fact that the stitch lasts is simply because after a while the skin itself heals. The stitch wouldn't hold indefinitely. It's only holding because the skin itself is healing. Nonetheless, you are stitching in your normal way and your work endures. Reuven Ribiat, in his Laws of Shabbos, the four-volume work, in his footnotes, quotes this view that people quote from Rosh Shlomo Zalman and argues against it. He argues it's not so. The Gemara talks about prohibitions against cutting fingernails on Shabbos and tearing skin on Shabbos. And it mentions the issue of gozes, shearing, like shearing a sheep. It doesn't mention korea, tearing, which is what I would have expected, because korea is what we use as the opposite of stitching. In other words, in the Mishnah that lists the 39 malachos, we talk about stitching and we talk about tearing stitches, korea. If connecting skin is stitching, then separating skin should be tearing. But no one in the Gemara ever mentions that as a concern regarding skin. And so he... Yeah, that's a whole other discussion. But no one even mentions korea. They mention gozes, shearing. So he argues against, and he quotes Rabbi Yisrael Belsky as arguing against as well, and saying someone is misquoting Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach, which is a very strong statement to make when someone quoting Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach is the Nishmas Avram, who is no slouch to say the least. Rav Ribiat also noted that Rav Elyashiv is in fact strict on this point. So this is the major obstacle when it comes to treating the wounds. Are you going to consider this a biblical issue? I should also note regarding application of band-aids, it is a general rule that if you're going to stick the band-aid to the band-aid, right? A kid has a cut on his finger, that's the most common example, and you wrap the band-aid around the finger so the ends of the band-aid overlap, now you for sure have a problem with tofer. Because now you're sticking paper to paper, right? It's not to the skin. So if you're going to use a band-aid on a kid on Shabbos, it's worthwhile to make sure that you stick it to the skin itself. And not let it overlap itself, and not let it overlap the other end of the band-aid. That the Shemir Shabbos Kelchasa mentions, and seems to be a uniform concern among the poskim. But that's a concern.
You don't get into Dorshen and Miskaven with that, because you don't really care about that.
Well, I do. How else is it going to stay on the kid's skin, on the kid's finger?
Because it says how the band-aid is going to go around the finger. You don't really care that the ends are being met. Because your goal is not to put in the two, those for the malachas to take place, you have to have A touching B, and that's what you want as your malacha. Here you're not interested in that. It's a byproduct of what you're trying to do.
Yeah, but it's clearly nichole. It's clearly, this is what you want. You want the band-aid to stick. And I don't see that as a factor on this. I think that's, yeah. At the very least, it's low ichbaslay, but I think it's stronger than that. We could get into the side issue of psikreshe also, but I don't think that's so relevant on this issue. But let's say we follow the strong view stated by Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa that there's no issue of tofer for skin, that you can stitch. There's a separate problem. How do you finish off the stitches? You tie a knot. Well, kshira is for sure a problem on Shabbos. You're tying a thread. This won't apply if you're dealing with the steristrips. Right? This is specifically an issue of stitching. With a steristrip, I saw pictures of them, and you know, you're just taking two adhesive things and sticking them on either side of the skin, and done with. There's no knot. But for stitches, it is an issue. Leading the Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa to say, if you take a look at source Yud Tes, even though he says it's not an issue of stitching skin, nonetheless, if you can wait with stitching up the wound until after Shabbos, without any concern for endangering or worsening, really, the condition of the victim, you shouldn't stitch it on Shabbos. Because there is a need to make a knot in the thread, and that is an enduring knot. I wonder what he would say regarding dissolving stitches. Remember that when we discussed writing on Shabbos, his position was that writing which is going to disappear, even if it's going to be days later, is not called writing, biblically, on Shabbos, because it is something which fundamentally is not Dabar HaMiskayim, something that endures. So I wonder what he would say regarding a dissolving stitch, whether he would say the same thing. I couldn't find any record of his comments on it, but it seems to me that the same rule should apply. But that's a second consideration. There's a third consideration, and that's the issue of hotza'ah, transport outside the Eruv. However, that doesn't really apply when you're dealing with Band-Aids. The reason it doesn't apply when you're dealing with Band-Aids, and I brought you the Mishnah Berurah on this issue about a bandage that's over a wound. It's in Source Chaf. I'm not going to read it out, but you'll see it's there in Source Chaf. That you can go outside an area without an Eruv with a Band-Aid on your skin on Shabbos. No one seems to be terribly concerned about it. Because it's considered to be something that you are wearing, it's not something you would remove to display to somebody. It's not something that you want to have fall off, and it's something that's connected to you. So therefore, that's not really an issue. The last issue is the issue of tzoveya, coloring a material. Is that an issue? So it's certainly not an issue for stitches, but is it applicable for a bandage or for a Band-Aid? And the answer is it depends. There are two ways to understand the Torah's prohibition against coloring something. One way to look at it is coloring in a way that improves a product. That's what's prohibited. The other way to look at it is creating color at all. Right? Think about writing on Shabbos. I'm not allowed to write on Shabbos. It doesn't matter whether I write something useful or not. I write letters, I'm in trouble. So maybe for coloring, even if what I'm doing is not a useful coloring, I'm coloring a Band-Aid. Nonetheless, I put a Band-Aid on a wound and the wound bleeds, I'm coloring the Band-Aid. On the other hand, if coloring is specifically coloring in a useful way, it'll apply to the Band-Aid as well. I'm sorry, it will not apply to the Band-Aid. There's no use in coloring the Band-Aid, I'm sorry. So, such that we actually hold, you're not allowed to place a durable cloth on a wound because you might color it in a way that improves it. However, I stress, this is not an issue for Band-Aids, this is not an issue for gauze, because the poskim in the end say, when you're dealing with something that is disposable, and that's what we're talking about. When you're dealing with something that is disposable and you're doing it in the manner of dirtying, there is no concern. So the Shmir Shabbos Kelchas I discussed it, for example, in the last source on the page regarding cleaning your mouth with a napkin. You're going to color the napkin, right? Nonetheless, it's in the manner of dirtying. It's a disposable item. This is not a consideration. The same thing is true regarding a pad that a woman might use. The same thing is true regarding a Band-Aid and gauze and all that. There is no consideration. I mention it here because there are sources about not putting a cloth, in a way that it's going to get that's going to be reddened. That's why we mention it. There are other issues that theoretically we need to discuss, but that are beyond the scope of the discussion right now. Washing a bed sore is one of them. It's an interesting issue. Another important issue, which I would love to do at some point, but it's not really going to be in a practical medical halacha shir, it's its own standalone issue, dealing with contradictions between scientific assessment and the standard halachic assessment of old. What do you do? For example, the Gemara says outright that any wound caused by metal is a life and death wound. Outright. It talks about internal wounds as automatically being considered something that's a must treat, a makar shel chalal, like we talked about before. But already the Shulchan Aruch says, yes, it's a must treat wound unless you know it's not. So the how we view that is a much larger issue, and it comes up here, it comes up in this discussion, because the laceration often is from something metal. And now I need to know, do I treat it, or about tetanus and all the other issues that come into play. Trying to wrap all this up, so to speak, and state something of some practical relevance, again, telling you, ask the Marad Asra for practical guidance, but say something that's close to practical. In terms of the first stage, halting the bleeding, So you apply pressure, and if you need to apply pressure with a bandage or gauze or whatever it is, you do it, and you don't worry about coloring the bandage. That's not a problem.
But so, at yes. point, if you don't have any of that, so you only have a cloth, a towel.
Then you're
going to color it.
Right. So what you would have to do, right? So you would have to do is dispose of it afterwards. You make it disposable. Yeah.
Right.
The step number two is the issue of cleaning. So disinfectant is fine to do. I mean, infection is a real halachic concern. So you squirt your saline or whatever it is, your hydrogen peroxide, you know, that you're going to put on your even your antibiotic, and you know that's what you do. Closing the wound. So ideally, stitches should wait until after Shabbos because of the concern for the closing knot. And potentially the concern about tefira. The Steristrip, we generally take the view, from what I understand, that that stitching human skin does not apply. And you have to open the package carefully. You make sure not to tear letters. Those separate considerations. But the Steristrip, it appears, would be the recommended way to close the wound. The poskim ask the question of, what if by waiting until after Shabbos, I'm not going to be able to use stitches anymore, and there's a cosmetic consideration? And that goes back to Laser's question. You know, it's not as though I can always come back after Shabbos to handle it. So, as surprising as it may be to some, the poskim seem to say, I'm not concerned about the cosmetic factor. That's not considered enough of a justification for doing the knot on the stitch at the end of the stitches. Some argue against that and say, well, wait a minute, you have tshuvos that permit people to get cosmetic surgery, not on Shabbos, but in general, to get cosmetic surgery because we do consider the beauty to matter and the psychological aspects and being able to get a shidduch and all the issues that are raised in the poskim. Certainly then you should argue that one would be permitted to do this on Shabbos. Nonetheless, it seems to me, based on the research that I've done, that the poskim are against the stitching on Shabbos if you are going to be the one to do it, which of course leaves open the possibility of you go to someone who isn't Jewish, and that's where the send to the hospital or send to another doctor option might come into play.
The issue with stitching is, who's doing the stitching and are they Jewish or not?
Well, that would certainly affect the way we would view it. Yes.
But non-Jew doing the stitching might be allowed.
Right, so the problem is, if you really believe that doing the knot is a d'oraisa, is a biblical consideration, then I don't see how the non-Jew helps. Based on what we've said, we don't want him doing a biblical. You know, if my concern is only d'rabbanan, then I can see having him do it. The only reason I would be more lenient with the non-Jew would be if you're going to tell me that there's a real concern for disfigurement or something like that. So maybe that's a side to use to combine on this. And you know, I'm happy when you get to that point. Someone please hit the switch. Thank you. It's next door.
Next door.
In any case, in such a situation, I'm happy to say, ask the posig rather than asking me. And then finally, when you get to the issue of covering the wound, bandages are fine. Yes.
Glue.
Right. So the glue seems to have the same rule that the Steristrip has. It doesn't seem to be any different. You're still combining. You're still taking two sides and linking them together. So it's the same level as the Steristrip. And the exothermic reaction is not a consideration of Havara or anything like that. You're not approaching the heat. That would be an issue. Yeah.
The knot is a concern with the sewing. What if you put a clip on the end? Can you still sew?
In other words, what if I do the stitches, but I clip it? Will that even work? I mean, will that take the place of a knot?
Well, I was going to say, just don't do the knot. I mean, there's some benefit to just...
Yeah, if you have the option of stitching without doing the knot, and you're dealing with a case of either potential infection or disfigurement, then I think you can, and I stress this as I, not... You know, but I would think you could rely on the views like the Shemir Shabbos Geochasa that say that stitching does not apply by human skin.
And therefore staples.
And therefore staples would then have the same heter, because the staples would be subject to the same consideration of stitching, but also subject to the same leniency.
There's also subcutaneous stitching and steristrips without a knot.
Interesting. You have the same...
Beginning of the wound.
Right.
I mean, I'm not a surgeon, but I've seen that.
There's no problem with anesthetizing.
Right, so the issue of applying the anesthetic and giving the shot, as I understand it, do not involve chavala, do not involve creating a wound. Is that correct? That There's
advocate.
Yeah. The advocate of pain. You know, if there's going to be bruising, then potentially you do have an issue in giving a shot. Is it a topical anesthetic, or is it it's done by injection? So it would seem to me, and I say it would seem to me, I didn't do enough research on it to speak with any authority, but it would seem to me that you do have the issue of Hovel then, of creating a wound by giving the shot. And in that case, again, that becomes a reason to go back to doing the Steristrip rather than do the stitch.
How about Memlari for the acquaintance?
Right, so here's a question for the doctors, and I was wondering about this when I was preparing the shear. When you apply the antibiotic, do you need to smear it? Are you able to leave it on the surface and then scrape it off afterwards?
You could just drop it on.
Sorry? You don't need it at all?
Yeah.
Okay, then there's your answer.
But in terms of making a wound with a needle, you can go through the wound. You don't have to make a new wound.
You can go through the wound. Then you have no problem. Although the kid might really object. No, it probably hurts. That's what they do? Okay, so if you're going into the existing wound, then your injection of the anesthesia is not a problem.
Yeah.
And that's why it's important. That's why it's important to study these things from the sources from the beginning rather than just say, well, this is permitted and this is prohibited, because then you understand how to apply it to a medical issue like that. I have to make sure to wrap up, so I'm going to just do the last point. The last point in terms of covering the wound is that bandages are fine. I'm not worried about the bleeding restarting and potentially coloring the bandage. That's not a problem. One should make sure the bandage does not stick to itself. And there's no issue of walking around outside, no air, whatever, without with a bandage. That's fine.
Good point you made right after the bandage.
Just that it shouldn't stick to itself. That we talked about. The God willing, the next shear is going to be on the 21st. But watch your emails, please, to see whether it switches to the 14th. We'll be talking about issues in taking call on Shabbos. Thank you.